The Truck and Driver podcast is sponsored by Fortune Tires, who manufacture high-quality, durable tires designed for operators who are looking for exceptional value across every application. Fortune Tires is proud to partner with International Tires, the exclusive distributor of their truck tires in the UK. For more info, visit internationaltires.com/fortune or call 0121 552 6888. Drive forward with Fortune Tires. Hello and welcome back to the Trucking Driver Podcast. You're joined today by myself, Doogie Rankin, and...
Cameron Allen.
Cameron from Northern Ireland, Chirpy and Co. It's been a while. How are you getting on, my good man?
Yeah, not too bad, Doogie. Thank you very much. Yourself?
Super busy. We've got another... We seem to be doing more and more of these bumper issues for the magazine, so we've got 132 pages again next issue. This time it's all about specialist haulage, heavy and abnormal stuff. So, been an interesting one to put together, but had quite a few articles to write. So, been busy with that deadline on Friday, and then it's into the British special, which has been my baby for some time. So, we've got that, and then there's a Volvo special, then a normal issue, and then the DAF special for Christmas. And I'm mentioning Christmas in the middle of August, so...
Well, nothing like being forward planning, you know?
They come thick and fast, and we're only doing 12 issues a year now rather than the silly 13 we were doing for quite a long time. So, yeah, it doesn't seem to have made a difference. I think it did a couple of weeks back. I think we got a longer time to put together one of the issues, but certainly not with this one. But, you know, the wide variety, the wide, wide world of haulage is nothing if not diverse. I'd spoken on a previous podcast about the story, did you see, on Motor Transport, about the drivers complaining that they were hard done to and the hauliers were behaving like dictators and all this. And I'd come to the conclusion that it was really a regional sort of thing. I mean, it doesn't affect you because you run your own business. So if your boss is acting like a dictator, then, you know, stop it.
Yeah. have a few quiet words on the side, maybe.
Yeah, it's a curious one that no further forward with it. I think some regions of the country you're much more limited in what options are available to you, and some areas are a little bit depressed. But all I can say to anybody is, if you're looking for a haulage job, and there was somebody who said, I can't get in front of recruiters, to hell with recruiters doing all that kind of stuff. Go to a truck show. Go and speak to the people that are there with the trucks. You might get to speak to some of the people that own the company. You know, chat away to the drivers, because these are the people that are going to be, you know, passionate about trucks and interested in things. And if you're looking for a job, you're far more likely to get lucky there and get somebody to maybe take a chance on you, assuming you've got all your faculties intact. Then you'd do far better doing something like that than trying to go through some recruitment place and then get into one of the big corporations who are not even particularly willing to take people on without a lot of experience. You know, everybody's got to start somewhere. And another thing I would just say is, don't knock rigid work. I know a lot of people are fast-tracked into Arctics these days, but not long ago, if you had your Arctic licence, you would kind of have to do your apprenticeship in a rigid first, which is not a bad idea at all, to start off in rigids. And besides the point, not everybody has to drive an Arctic anyway. There's loads of good jobs in rigids, you know. So how did you start out driving? Have you always driven for the family business, Cameron?
Well, I drove for family business. Started driving about the yards, just as a lot of us did when we were younger, just moving and shunting lorries about. And then I got my test at 18 and went and did my time in the rigid. And then when that end of the business sort of got quiet, then I moved, and I actually didn't do my class one right away after my rigid. I left it a year or two, and then I went and did my class one, and I drove for loan transport for a few years before going back home and starting up my own, you know.
Yeah, well, that's what I did. I did my class two, my rigids first, and then I actually did ADR, and then I did my class one. And I found, to begin with, when you had my rigid licence, I wasn't even getting near a full-size lorry, like an 18 or a 26-tonner. I was only allowed in 7.5-tonners, and I had to bide my time for a few months before somebody actually let me out in a 26-ton rear steer Iveco Stralis, which was Orchard Timber of Livingston, multi-dropping timber, going into housing schemes with it and everything. And that was a fair old challenge. I mean, what do you think? It is well worth doing a bit of time in a rigid when you're first passed your test. Would you agree on that?
Oh, definitely. Like, again, I did a wee bit of time in a 7.5-ton before I moved up to the 26-ton. And, well, first lorry I drove was a Mercedes, and here we are back in a Mercedes. But, again, a lot of the places we were doing back then is similar to what we're doing now. Livery yards, agri-merchants, garden centres, hardware stores. I suppose the really only thing that's changed massively in the places we'd be into now would be the pet shops. We do a lot of pet shops now as well. And I do think spending your time in the rigid, I didn't have a rear steer. I had a tag axle, but she wasn't rear steer. And when you can get that into places, it opens your eyes to where you can get an Arctic into, and it's great practice, I think, for moving up into the Arctic.
Yeah, you know, there's rookie mistakes that you can make in a rigid which aren't as, you know, potentially catastrophic as doing it in an Arctic, like ending up down some road that you're not meant to and you've got to reverse out of it or something like that. But I remember with the first 7.5-tonners, they were just horrible things. They had like huge big bodies, rock-hard suspension, big tail swings on them. Most of them were like 5 or 6-speed manuals, and you'd be like hitting your hand off the dashboard, changing gear in some of them. And yeah, they'd just like puddle jump and bounce all over the road. So when you finally got into an 18 or a 26 tonner, you're thinking, whoa, I've arrived here. This is like proper. This has got air controls for the suspension on the back of it. And
yeah, no, it was. It was a great step up when you moved up from the steel springs and the 7.5-ton body. Although the first 7.5-ton I drove was a Mercedes Atego, 2001 Mercedes Atego.
Yeah, I actually found them to be one of the better 7.5-tonners. They were one of the nicer ones to drive.
Yeah, they were. Well, we actually, when we were looking at buying our first wee lorry for Chirpy & Co, we were sort of toying between an Atego and the Mitsubishi Fusion Canter that we have now. The reason we went for the Canter was because smaller cabs, smaller chassis, you could actually get a bigger payload into the Canter than you could into an Atego. Now, your Atego would definitely have handled it better than the Canter.
Yeah, because it's a heavier duty vehicle.
Definitely is. And the Canter, they are designed for the sort of work we were doing. Like, I was tramping that thing, doing 450, 500 mile a day at times, and from one end of the country and back and over to London and lying across the seats and everything in it.
Wow, and that like wasn't that long ago either. You were doing it 70s style.
Yeah, well, it wasn't that long ago, and I left driving a 620 to go in, a 620 Scania V8 to go and do that, but it got me to where I am now, so I can't complain.
Aye, it's definitely worth doing those apprenticeships in the small vehicles, because as you go up every step, you appreciate it along the way, the more comfort. And I'd kind of realised as well, once I'd been doing quite a bit of the Arctic stuff, you realise a lot of the Arctic jobs are a lot easier than a lot of the rigid jobs. Some of these guys out in rigids have got some of the hardest jobs in all of lorry driving. with the multi-dropping and the places that they've got to go, and you know, the overall comfort and specification of the vehicle as well. Some of the tail swings on them give me the fear, like you've really got to watch what you're doing with them. But they have up, they've got a lot more refined and comfortable as well. You're not likely to find any of them with manual gearboxes in them anymore. Although I think the biggest truck you can now buy with a manual box, and it's a DAF LF, which goes up to 18 tons. You can get that with a, you can get that with a 9-speed manual in it still. So if you want a little tipper or something like that, or a little tanker, you can have that with a manual box. But that's your lot.
Yeah. Fuck, well, I know there's a lot of people say that still love to drive a manual. Personally, I wouldn't. I've been there, done that, and I've no desire to go back to them. It's sort of hard to beat being able to put it into gear and away you go. And they've got refined enough now that they aren't as, I know some people still give out about different models, and yes, they all have their pluses, but most of them all now, they're good gearboxes and nearly everything now, so.
Oh, everything's well sorted automatic-wise now. It's not like it was a few years ago where you had, where the Mercedes had a clunky gearbox, or the AS-tronic gearboxes were really basic, and it was kind of the Volvo and the Renault that stood out from all the rest. All the gearboxes are fantastic now. I do still love a manual, but sort of like, you know, I would like a week in a manual. If I, the last time I did a week in a manual, I was starting to get sciatica again and pain in my hip. So I was like, if I was on this all the time, it probably wouldn't be kind to me. But as a treat now and again, as long as you're not running around by London or something like that, you know, I do love a manual gearbox. But unfortunately, with all the technology in trucks now, it's not really possible for them to have those gearboxes, because the truck needs to be able to take control of itself in the event of an emergency. And it just got to the point where it was that much of a pain in the arse to tool up to make the small volume, and lesser and lesser guys were out there that, that could drive them. So, you know, end of an era. It's a shame, but that's the way that it is.
Yep. No, that's it. They were great when they were there, but I guess it's like everything, everything moves on and gets better, so.
Well, I wonder how long some guys are going to keep their kind of last of the line manuals. There'll be some old guys who that will drive the last manual until they retire. You know, they might have got like a 22 plate DAF XF with a manual box, and they might keep that for a good few years. Their employer might let them just hold on to it until they don't want to drive anymore. But kind of rare cases. I was saying to Graham Shuttleworth of G&J Shuttleworth, who I do milk tanker driving with, I was like, you need to keep an eye out for one of the last of the like 530 Super Space manuals, because they won't come round again. This is it. It's the end of an era. And he's like, yeah. So he's keeping an eye out, because I think they had 6 manuals last year, and I think they're down to like maybe 1 or 2 now, because they're just old. They've worn out, such as a cycle of life with trucks, unfortunately. But you're a Merc man. Drive it. What is it? Remind us what it is that you drive again, because it's not that long. You've not had the lorry all that long, I don't think, have you?
I'll have the Merc 2 years now in October. Mercedes Actros, big space, 25-480.
How are you getting on with it?
Yeah, absolutely love it. Brilliant truck. I had the DAF before that. DAF's a great truck for living in. But once they get to that age, they want for parts, and that's that, really. And we had Scania before that, and I've driven nearly everything. I haven't spent a lot of time in iVehicles or man diesels, but everything else is all them mainline products. So I've driven them all plenty, and the plan was always to come back to Mercedes. And it just sort of came from, I was sort of starting to look when we met up at RTX there 2 years ago. Or 3 years ago, was it?
It was last year, I think.
No, it wasn't. It was the year before. I didn't get
last year. Was it 2 years ago?
Yeah, I think it was, because it was in around that time I was starting to look about changing.
Yes, it was. It was 2023, you're correct.
Yeah, because we were having that much issues with the DAF. And I got speaking to, I spoke to them all the dealers are Scania, because I couldn't get anybody at the Scania to talk to me. But looked at them all, got speaking to Merck. I told them that we used to run Mercedes and we'd sort of moved away. And they're like, well, what would it take to bring you back? And I said, well, the main
Massive discount, please.
Well, the dealership was part of the reason we left, because the backup wasn't there. But to be fair to Mercedes, they were the only ones that followed up from RTX as well. Within 2 days, I had a phone call from Mercedes over here, MBNI. And it was sort of back and forth the rest of the year, and there just wasn't the right truck at the time. And then Gavin Harvey, the salesman, the right truck came and at the right price, and he gave me the right job for the trade-in with the DAF, and here we are. And another thing with Mark, they were more than happy to put 4 years full R&M on a second-hand truck. This truck was 2 years old when I bought it, whereas DAF, Scania, Volvo, none of the dealers were willing to give R&M. They just give you extended warranty on driveline products.
No R&M at all, not even like 1 year or 2 years. Nothing.
If they were in a certain, if they were within a certain age and they still had it left from
yeah, if they still had it like originally, yeah,
they'd let you have it. But moving up, it was just service plans or extended driveline warranty. You couldn't get top to toe R&M that covers everything.
Well, I've got to say that is a deal sealer. That 4 years on it with 2 years being 2 years old.
So I got the 4 years R&M on it, which is great. And to be fair, any issues we've had, there's been nothing major. We had a few issues with the dash, and that was the longest thing to get sorted that we've had in the past 2 years, because it was obviously just an issue with this lorry, because it's not a serviceable part. And the parts all had to be ordered in because they've never had it before.
What part of the dash was it? One of the screens?
The dash just stopped working completely. It's shut off. The lorry was driving okay, but it would turn the lights off on you, and it would turn the dash off, and it would flash up that it has the hazard lights on, but it didn't. It must have been some sort of safety feature. It would put the hazard lights on, but they weren't actually on. So they ended up having to change the actual dash tablet and some interface for the dash as well. But they were very good. That happened, and they got me a demo while that was being done, and I have to give it to them. If it's in for an inspection, I just sit and wait to do it. Away I go. If it needs anything or it's in longer than a day, they're very good. They'll give me a van or another lorry if they have one there. MBNI have been absolutely brilliant.
Who's it? What's the name of the dealer?
MBNI, Mercedes-Benz Truck and Van.
And where are they?
Main depot is in Mollusk, and they've just built a new depot down in Dungannon, which will be open a year now in October. And a state-of-the-art building, absolutely brilliant. It's only an hour up the road from our yard.
Ah, fantastic.
And then I went to the start of the year there, and ended up buying a Mercedes Vito van off Gavin Harvey again. Absolutely legend of a salesman, so he is. So he's more than happy to do deals and work with you in every way he can. So,
right, what's your Vito used for? Is it like a proper work van, or is it...
It's a
van as well.
No, it's a work van. It's all graphiced up the same as the lorry. And well, my dad actually drives it most of the time there for doing sales. But it's been well loaded, so it has. We'll give it its dues now. It's done plenty of tramping, so it has fully loaded. So,
what engine and gearbox is in the Vito?
Manual gearbox, and it is the 2.1 litre off the top of my head is the size of the engine. I can't remember the numbers, but that's on it. But it's the bigger of the engines that you can get. Very, 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 very lively wee van, so it is.
Yeah, I was going to say, a lot of these vans of that kind of size these days go like old hot hatches do. They can be quite a lot of fun to drive, but you've got to watch that they can only do 50 on single carriageways and 60 on dual carriageways, which is just ridiculous.
Yeah.
You can get a Volkswagen Transporter with a, like, 200 and whatever it is horsepower, 60 miles an hour dual carriageways. So you've got to really watch what you're doing with the speed camera vans, because they love catching vans out like that, and it's so easy.
I have found when you are driving it, it's very easy to not realise what speed you're doing.
Yeah.
It's definitely got plenty of get up and go. So no, it's been, again, been great so far, and perfect addition to the fleet, along with the puddle jumper, as we call it, the wee 7.5 ton there. It's only back on the road there since springtime.
What's that, the Canter?
The Canter, it was off the road for nearly 5 years.
Right.
So it was getting, well, it came off the road, and at that stage we were already looking at moving up into the Arctic. So at the same time we bought the DAF, and there wasn't enough work for the two of them, so I didn't panic about getting it back on the road. We sort of just went at it as we went along, and then it should have been done a lot sooner, but just the way things worked out. So we bought a donor lorry and split the engine down in it, and it got sort of half of its own engine and half the other engine and the gearbox off the other one put into it, just because of the miles that was on it and the abuse, let's say, it got doing miles and very well loaded all the time. So
yeah, like I say, those type of 7.5 tonners are kind of based on a lighter chassis, whereas like the Atigo, that's the lightest version of what goes up to end up being a heavier chassis.
Yeah.
So yeah, there is a kind of there's a bit of a difference there. So yeah, that's
Definitely. But we find the Canter's just such a handy wee lorry, especially for the likes of the pet shops we do that are maybe up side alleys of main streets. They're never in simple places, but.
I can imagine. I've had enough bother in the last few months finding timber merchants in places and trying to squeeze in all these places. Nothing was ever built or put there with Arctics in mind. It's a nightmare, a lot of places. So I can imagine going out to a lot of these retail places that you go to, because you've got, what trailers is it you use? You've got like a short one, don't you?
We have a 35-foot STC Urban tag axle, and it is brilliant for getting in and out places. You lift that tag axle, it's only a two axle, so you lift the tag axle and it just goes round like a wheelbarrow. It's a great piece of kit. And then we have we just bought a 2016 Dunbar tri-axle, 4.5. in height there, and well, it's the main trailer now. It's out nearly every day of the week, so far now it's been a brilliant trailer for it pulls very well and it follows very well, which is what you need when you're going into places that you have half an inch on one side and 10 mil on the other.
Uh-huh. A Dunbar, that's not a name I'm all that familiar with, really, to be honest with you.
Personally, I would have always been STC, and when I was looking at changing, there was a few here and a few there, and I couldn't make my mind up. And then there was this Dunbar, which was sort of 85% refurbished, and it was just the right price, and I took a chance on it. The only experience I've had with Dunbar is one of the Rigids had a Dunbar body on it once upon a time, but it's a brilliant trailer. It's on soft axles, and it's been a good trailer. We've had it since January, and so far it's been great. Well, it's a back trailer. It's got 5 LED lights down the middle of it, and the inside it's got an insulated roof, which is brilliant. I didn't even know that was a thing outside of a fridge, to be honest.
See, when you're saying Dunbar, do you mean Dunbar, D-O-N space B-U-R?
Yeah. That's just the way I say it then.
Aye, sorry, I thought you meant Dunbar as in like the place out in the east of Scotland,
D-U-N-B-A-R. No, that's just the way I said it.
It's Dunbar.
Yeah, Dunbar.
Right, got you. Now I understand. Right, cool. I just Googled that there and I noticed that and I was like, yeah, you've got completely the wrong end of the stick here, don't you?
Sorry, that's my accent, the way I speak.
No, it's no problem. You've got a Scotsman and a Northern Irishman talking. Well, technically I'm Irish anyway. I've only got my Irish passport now. My British one's expired, so.
Oh, not so bad.
Aye, don't want to be waiting in the queues at the airport anyway.
well, if you can dodge them, you might as well.
but that's good that trailer's worked out well for you.
Yeah, no, it has. I'm very happy with it. We sort of were running the Urbans 4.2, and then I wanted a higher trailer for the likes of the haylage and stuff we do. They're sort of 7 foot plus pallets, so I wanted a good bit of height. But the ex Stobart trailer we had, it was 4.4, and I liked the height of it. It worked. And I just wasn't quite sure about that extra bit of height for the roads and stuff we'd be on. This one came up, and I had sort of been toying with going pillarless as well, just for the likes of the haylage there on the big farm pallets, as we call them, the big fertilizer ones. So they're a wee bit wider, and the product would overhang on them. So if you don't have the pillars, it means they're easier to load. You're not trying to fit pallets in round pillars.
Yeah, so that trailer doesn't have like posts in it.
Yeah, no posts in it.
That's handy.
A bigger supporting beam. So at the top front of the trailer, as it works its way back to the trailer, it sort of gets thicker. So it does, but it's worked out really well. The only thing I can fault about not having the pillars when you're doing the multi-drop like us. Say you open a quarter of the trailer to get a pallet off or two pallets off, and you tighten it back up and you redo them from buckles, your back buckles go loose then.
It's not going to work. So, you've got to do the whole lot every time.
Yeah, so every time you do a drop, you're having to redo all your buckles. So that's a bit of a nuisance. But other than that, it's worked out great.
Yeah. Oh, what are the buckles like on it? Because I've experienced quite a lot of different curtain siders lately after not being near any of them at all. And there's so many different kinds of buckles that you get on these things. And you know what? I'm sure that this is a pet hate for loads and loads and loads of drivers, is that when you see them and the tails are supposed to be like folded and tucked in, and they've just left them all out flapping about in the breeze.
Yeah.
That just says to me, whoever's driving it, I don't care.
Yeah, I'd have to agree with you on that. I'm very, very particular. All the tails are folded up and tucked away, and I hate to see them flapping. So I do.
Some of them on the buckles, it's difficult to get a kind of a right good pull and a good bit of tension on them without sort of like pulling the thing out and. I don't know. There must be a particular type, a particular method with those buckles to get into them. But I don't know what it is. It always looks to me if all the tails are like flapping about that somebody just doesn't like give a toss.
Yeah. Well, I found this one has the stainless steel buckles on it, I found that they were brand new curtains, so. If I had them folded from the very start, they now sort of sit when they are undone, they sit in the right place. So when you close them, they fold away nice and neat. And it's the same with the curtains on the wee rigid.
That's ideal, that, when it just like they fold up and just go right back into place. Yeah, yeah.
If everybody sort of did it from the curtains are put on, I do think they just sit there far better, especially when you're washing and stuff, because they get the water in them and it helps them fold, and they stay in their place better. But yeah, no, I always have always been somebody for that. Mm-hmm. And rolling up straps when you've strapped a pallet, always roll up the end of the strap and set it in under the pallet. I hate to see boys just shoving straps in under pallets.
Oh dear! Oops! No, that would be me in a curtain cider. I mean, obviously, when you've got a flat on, I'll go and fold, yeah. go and fold them up. And I know some guys can do that knot trick with like the end of a ratchet strap, so it's just like kind of it's like all rounded out, and then you just pull yeah. on it and it comes loose. Now I don't know how to do that. But yeah, no, I know what you mean about rolling up straps like that. I tell you what I used for the first time ever recently was one of those strap winders for ratchet straps. It's like this plastic thing, and you put the end of the strap in it, and then you just like turn it.
Yeah.
Have you ever seen those?
Yeah, I have a metal one there with magnets on it, and you can stick it to the chime of the trailer, and then you wind
goodness.
Up the strap on.
What a game changer. How did I not know about one of those ratchet strapping devices? I was like, this is amazing. The amount of hours of my life I've probably spent manually rolling up ratchet straps. And then this thing, you just plonk the strap in it. Wind. And that's it done. It's amazing. I'm sure they're not even expensive.
I think I've had mine, must have mine 7 or 8 years, I think.
God, I tell you what, there was an evil little person sitting in the corner of my head with that lorry saying, you could just take that, Diggy. That could be yours. And I was like, no, you will not do that. Just go and look on eBay and buy one, eh? But I was like, that is, oh, what a game changer. And at Assen, there were these guys there, and they had this, it was like an electric one. I think it went on a drill or something.
Yeah,
this thing was amazing. And it was like, whoop, and the strap was like wrapped up in like a matter of seconds. And I was like, somebody needs to import them. I've never seen them in the UK.
Yeah, I've seen them. I've seen them for sale online, and I've seen videos of ones using them. But that's another piece of equipment to carry. Whereas my wee magnet one, you can just stick it up to the lid of the inside of the toolbox, and it sticks in there out of the way. And then you pull it off and set it on the chime, and you can wind away.
Yeah, I'm just actually looking on eBay now at ratchet strap winders, drill bit ratchet strap winder, £10.77. Oh, really? There's another one. Ratchet strap winder, genuine, wind up your truck strap, £17.99. Lovely. All right, so these things are very common, and they've been around for ages, and somehow I have never seen one until the other week. Life is weird like that.
It is indeed, yeah. Definitely is. You had one of the arrows out last week?
Yeah, I did manage to get out and do a couple of shifts over the weekend there in the Volvo Aero 540 XXL. Managed to squeeze in a little bit of time on the tankers with that. And I tell you how good it is to be back on the tankers after mucking about with overhangs and dwangs and all that kind of stuff. Just plug a pipe in and going for a lie down. A nice narrow low height tanker. Yeah, the Volvo 540 XXL, the difference is it's a much bigger bed. Up front of the cab, it's exactly the same as a normal FH. I don't know if you could spec one with a normal bed so you had like more space behind you if you wanted to do like yoga in the cab or something. I don't know. But yeah, the bed's massive. The upper lockers are the same. It was a twin tag, drove absolutely beautifully. So nice to drive, handles really nice. You had to switch off. There was this thing where the steering grabs you and tries to hold you between the lanes. So that and the lane departure warning are on the same button. So you can switch that off, and then there's a driver assist system where it keeps scolding you and telling you you're tired. That gets switched off, and the speed warning recognition gets switched off at the start of every key on and go. You get used to doing that, or it'll beep and boop and warn you about stuff. But yeah, that 540, Volvo haven't changed the power output or done anything that much to that engine, but yeah, it goes very, very well. And I think the FH, for a tag axle, really, really nice handling with the tag up. Sat very well on the road, and it got so much attention as well with the paint job that was on it. So many people wanted to speak to me about it. There were guys wanting to have a look inside it and everything. And highly recommended. I know that Joe Ashton took it out as well, and he got 12.5 miles to the gallon. on a run from down by Knutsford down to Aylesbury, mostly kind of motorway, but it went across A50 by Stoke, 12 and a half miles to the gallon. That's just bonkers. That's not even a, yeah, that's by no way an economy oriented lorry. 76% of new FH sales are now aeros. So yeah, it's really come on strong. But if you think about the think about that, I finished a week on 10 and a half mile with a gallon, and it's still pretty much brand new. And that was without sort of trying or anything like that. Yeah, these kind of figures were unthinkable a few years ago. So it's well worth, if you can do it, if you're running something that's down low in the MPG, like getting into something that can get you those figures like that. In some cases, the fuel saving will literally pay for the truck.
Yes. Yeah.
The difference that we're talking about here. But yeah, the aero, definitely, the front end of that definitely seems to make a difference on the fuel. And I suspected that the 540 having an extra bit of grunt on the tankers, not having something that's very eco-orientated, would actually be more efficient. And I was right. Because you need that grunt to get up hills. You don't want to be like sort of waddling and struggling like you're driving through treacle with something that's trying to hold on to gears for too long. It's always reckon that you're better off with a bit of grunt and a bit of momentum carrying.
Yeah, no, I'd agree with you on that. So I would.
So next up, I'm trying to get a hold of a compressed natural gas truck. So I'm hoping that, well, it's Scania and Iveco that are mainly the ones that are into them. So I know that Iveco's new 500 CNG, well, a lot of range is booked up busy, but I'm hoping Scania can sort me out with one, because I'm going to have a go at running one of them on the tankers for a week. Let's see if we can manage to do it, because the dairy industry obviously produces biogas as a byproduct, yeah. So it could be the ideal solution for them. So I've done a lot of LNG, which unfortunately kind of ran aground up north when the fueling network got pulled out. But CNG seems to be kind of taking over as the more popular option, because it's much easier to store and fuel, and they're starting to get enough of a range out the trucks now as well. So it'll be very interesting to see if I can manage to get by all right with a week's tramping and not making any special considerations for the truck, to see how I get on with some compressed natural gas. Other than that, demo-wise, coming up, there's the 500 diesel Iveco S-Way and the 580, which I'm very much looking forward to. I think it'll be the 500 first, which has got some really interesting torque characteristics to it. And it's got the second generation traction gearbox in it as well. And it'll be interesting to see how Iveco's mirror cams measure up to the rest. The Volvo mirror cams that I had on that FHXXL were all right. I could live with them. And I did like the wide angle option. And they've got the night mode on them as well. MAN's cameras, you can see the front corners of your bumpers, which none of the other ones have as far as I'm aware, which is a really nice feature, because that takes away a blind spot where you often see trucks with the front corner of the bumpers getting knocked. But all of these cameras seem to have, each of them have got their own special feature, and all the manufacturers need to get together and make one really good camera system instead of all doing their own thing.
Yeah.
You've got cameras, don't you?
Yeah, I do, yeah. I love them. I actually, one of the demos I had there not that long ago, it had mirrors, and I hated going back to them.
Yeah, once you're used to not having those blind spots there, when you're looking out the window, yeah, I can see how it could be difficult to go back. And I wouldn't recommend, if you've had a guy on a truck with cameras for quite some time, sticking him back in one with mirrors on it, because he's going to have gotten the habit of not having those blind spots there. So that's something to be mindful of. You definitely have to keep guys in one or the other.
Yeah, no, I'd agree. They're very good. One thing that sort of always baffled me, though, since like the XG came out with the front camera that does away with your front and side mirror.
Yeah.
Considering Mercedes were the first, like, in 2016-17 to move to cameras and start bringing them out. They still haven't moved to putting one of them corner cameras on and do away with the side mirror and the front mirror. I don't get that.
It's a daft speciality, that, the corner view camera with a massive wide-angle view on it. Like, yeah, that's daft. I don't know if daft have got a patent on it or something. Have you seen any other trucks with that camera apart from a daft?
I think Volvo have it of some description, but I had next year out in demos. I think it was actually the last time I did a podcast with Hughes, and it was so good. I think that should be made mandatory.
Yeah, that should be.
It is such an amazing piece of equipment and does away with such a blind spot.
It should be, considering how important these things are, how absolutely vital they are. The truck makers should all be made to get together and make one system that's the same for every truck. All these camera mirrors are the same and everything's interchangeable, and stop mucking about and trying to get one up on each other, because it's important. As the Volvo released the patent of the three-point seatbelt back in the day for cars, because it was such an important thing that they said that, no, everybody has to have this. And I think with the different ideas with the mirror cams, then if we're going to go down this route, then everybody should... You know, you can't have one having some special features that another one doesn't have. If it's a safety feature like that, everything should have the same thing.
No, I definitely agree, and I do. That is, I think, one of the things I don't like about this story is the fact that, well, I suppose I only had the XG for a week, but that one camera was probably one of the best bits of equipment I've seen on a lorry in a long time. It was really, 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 really good piece of equipment, so it is.
Curiously, you can get DAFs with normal mirrors and they'll have that corner view camera, and you can also get them with mirror cams, but they won't have the corner view camera. They'll have the mirror above the windscreen and above the side window, which is a curious thing.
Yeah, that's well thought out, isn't it?
Aye, but... Yeah, we have got, just to round things off on this podcast, I'd like to mention again, we have got RTX Scotland coming up later in 2025, 19th and 20th of November this year. Registration is now open, and there is an RTX coming to Northern Ireland as well.
Oh, good stuff. I'm going to try and get over to the one in Scotland and have a look at it, but
it's good that it's at the SEC in Glasgow, so really easy to get to. The one in Northern Ireland is at the Icon Centre.
Oh, okay.
I think it's called.
Are they hoping to do that next year? Are they? Or?
Yeah, that's next year. That's 2026. Don't ask me the date for it, because I can't find it right now.
No, that's good. I love RTX. This is one of the better shows. Really, really good. I'm actually sort of disappointed I didn't get this year as well. I planned to get last year and this year, and I never got to either. So I'll try and get over for RTX Scotland.
I've found the dates. RTX Northern Ireland is the 15th and 16th of April 2026. So RTX, if you're not familiar, it's a road transport expo. All the truck makers, all the trailer manufacturers, equipment, accessories, they all come together under one roof. You can get to see all the different new makes of trucks, new technology, do a whole load of networking, catching up with various people. And it's been such a big success for the company the company I work for, that owns Truck and Drive and Commercial Motor, that run it, that they've now expanded it out. So they're now in Scotland, 19th, 20th of November, and Northern Ireland at the Icon Centre, EIKON, 15th, 16th April 2026. And it's free to attend as well. But the only thing is, it's on during a weekday, so it is kind of aimed at hauliers more than drivers. But if you're on holiday that week, it's worth going to. It genuinely is.
Yeah, no,
I get the time off.
I suppose as an owner driver, I think it's a great show. It's a great opportunity to get speaking to the manufacturers and all other things in the industry. I actually sort of thought about when I seen Scotland, I actually I thought about maybe looking about putting a stand in and sort of advertising the blue and stuff, but I think I'll maybe leave it this year.
Well, that's right enough. Right, just to round this podcast off, tell everybody about your AdBlue service.
So in the past sort of 3 years, we've branched into AdBlue, just something else to, it's completely off topic to everything else we sell, but it was sort of something to keep us busy through the summer when things quieten down in the feed end of things. So yeah, we can offer AdBlue from 1,000 litres right down to 5 litres. And we can also offer a bulk service too, which we're working towards. I have a contact that I can work through to provide the bulk service at the minute, but we are looking towards doing it ourselves. But yeah, we can supply AdBlue, mainly doing it in IBCs. We'd be the biggest seller, especially into Scotland, where we've quite a lot in Scotland there at the minute that's all going out in IBCs to Scotland. And bits and pieces in England and around home as well. So 1,000 litre IBC, 205 litre barrels, 20 litre barrels, 5 litre barrels, and 10 litre barrels. Again, when it comes to the barrels, we don't sell them individually. We sell them by the pallet. But yeah, no. Any hauliers interested, get in contact and we can get you priced up.
And how do they get in contact with you?
Get us on our Facebook page, which is Chirpy and Co, or you can send me a friend request on Facebook, Cameron the Chirps on Facebook, or you can get in contact with yourself, Dougie. I'm sure you can pass them on.
Not a problem.
Or you can drop me an email at cameron@chirpybirdfood.com.
That's C-H-I-R-P-Y.
Yep.
As well. Cameron@chirpybirdfood.com for all your AdBlue needs. Fantastic. Right. Thank you very much for your time, Cameron. It's been a great to catch up with you. I'm glad everything's going well with the Mercedes, and I will hopefully see you at RTX Scotland.
Sounds absolutely brilliant, Dougie. Thank you very much, mate.
Thanks for listening to the Truck and Driver podcast, sponsored by Fortune Tyres. Fortune Tyres and International Tyres, bringing you innovation and reliability to support your operation. Learn more at internationaltyres.com/fortune or call 0121 552 6888. Drive forward with Fortune Tyres.